Cheerscast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Sammy's back.
Hey, how was your weekend up in the mountains with Natalie?
It was so great. Not like shushing down those fine white slopes. Yeah.
Oh, you went skiing, huh?
No. You want to go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me is frequent returning guest, the host of the SNL Nerds podcast. Please welcome back, John Trumbull. What's up, John?
Hey, Ryan. Thanks for having me back again.
Thank you for coming back again. And we were just kind of talking about it a little bit before this episode started. I think the last time we actually recorded together wasn't on Cheerscast. It was on SNL Nerds, and that was the tribute to George Wendt.
Yeah.
Who passed away before the season started. So that, by now it's been almost a year, I think, or however long it has been. But big picture, kind of just thoughts on George Wendt and his overall appearance as Norm or what he meant to the show?
Oh, well, I mean, he was one of the best parts of Cheers. I mean, obviously, it was like a murderer's row of cast members, and he was so great. The quote I always come back to, and George Wendt, and I can't remember who exactly said that, it was, some actors throw away a line, George throws away his entire performance. And it was meant as a compliment,
just the
sort of nonchalant way that he played Norm, because Norm wasn't a guy who had, like, big drives. I think Ken Levine on his blog said Norm was always tough to write for because he was like a pretty content character. You know, as long as he had his stool and his beer, he was pretty happy. And he didn't really want for much else in life. I mean, he complained about his wife, Vera, but you knew that deep down he really loved her. He was unemployed, but that just kind of became his norm, pardon the pun.
Right.
Where, you know, he wasn't really striving or stressing about not being at work. You know, he just kind of rolled the punches. And that was sort of what was so fun about him.
I've actually never thought about it this way, but you're right. Like, he's an awful protagonist for a story. Because if you think a story with conflict, you need a character to want something or to chase something and pursue. And the nature of the story is the conflict of how he or she gets it. If Norm doesn't want anything, which is kind of the case. I can see, actually. The episodes where he takes center stage have to be a little bit more manufactured. But
You know, I mean, it was harder to break stories for him. You know,
Well, the episode right before this one was when his wife Vera got a job working upstairs at Melville's, and that kind of led to a great climactic scene where he actually had to show a little bit more of his true self. But
yeah, doesn't he like tell off John Ellen Hill when she fires him? He fires her.
Anyway, but we're beyond that one, so we're up to season 9, episode 21. Cheers has chili. Written by Sherry Eichen, Bill Steinkellner, and Fief Sutton. This one directed by Andy Ackerman, and the original air date was Thursday, March 14th, 1991. Sam comes back from a ski weekend to find that Rebecca has turned the pool room into a tea room. Sam hates the dainty aesthetic and argues that his pool room is too financially valuable to Cheers to replace. Rebecca argues that she can make $500 in her tea room by closing time. Of course, there is no chance for her to make that much money, or quite possibly any money at all, until she starts serving bowls of delicious chili made from Woody's mom's recipe. Before long, she's raking in the profits, and Sam fears he's going to lose his pool room, so he tries to sabotage her new business by calling the fire marshal. Bad news for Sam, the fire marshal really likes chili. Sam feels bad for cheating to win the bet and denying Rebecca her well-earned success, so he agrees to buy a bowl of chili to put her over $500. Instead, he accidentally, probably, blows up the pressure cooker and half of the tea room. Rebecca doesn't believe it was an accident, though, and refuses to accept his apology until he can show actual tears of remorse. When Sam isn't able to cry, she breaks the windows of his Corvette to help him feel sadder. All right, John, what'd you think about this one?
I remembered this episode, but I think, you know, I rewatched it for the pod and I'm just like, yeah, this is a decent episode of Cheers. It's not one of the great episodes of Cheers. I don't think it's going to be in anybody's top 10 list, but it, like any episode of Cheers, even if it's not great, it's still pretty good. So it passes the time agreeably.
Yeah, I do remember this one as being like whenever Sam and Rebecca are put at odds, and like we've seen this a couple of times now in recent episodes, just Sam being kind of a jackass towards her, and it gets old really fast. But you're also kind of like, I don't necessarily want Rebecca to win because I don't care about her story that much.
Mm-hmm.
And also kind of, yeah, like the changing the whole pool room into a tea room without his consent, like really was, it's kind of a forced thing. Now
it's kind of an arbitrary conflict, I would say.
Yeah. It doesn't feel very important. Now, all that said, I still found myself like remembering a lot of really funny, good moments in this episode. So like you said, it's still a blast to watch. Starting off, I've always appreciated this, this teaser. Cliff is trying a prank on Carla, which you have to wonder, why would he be so foolish? But
yeah.
that's what we get. So he's leaving a tip for her, but what he does is he fills a glass of water up to the very top, puts the dollar on it, and then the tip tray over that, and then flips it so fast and with the sealed tight so that the water doesn't leak out. And it won't leak out until she lifts the glass. And of course, with it being filled to the very top, you can't really tell that it's full of water. So he's like, you know, this is a classic bar prank, and he's really proud of himself for thinking about it. Of course, when she walks up, either she is smarter than he thinks or she saw this coming, she flips the thing over and takes the dollar off, and it's dry and she doesn't make a mess. So what would Carla possibly do with a completely full glass of water and the idea that Cliff tried to prank her?
Yeah.
Throws the water right in his face, naturally. Yeah.
And I got to say, the way that John Ratzenberger's hair falls over his forehead is really funny and adds to the death. It's just, I don't know if they planned this somehow or if it just happened to end up that way. But like a big tuft of hair just ends up pointing straight down on his forehead. And it looks so goofy. It really adds to the gag.
I know. I wonder like if that was a thing where they didn't really like rehearse it or choreograph it with the water beforehand. Because even Norm's like reaction, like the way he like kind of jumps out of the way, like he wasn't expecting that much splash or something from that. And then, of course, you know, Cliff just sitting there soaking wet and everything with his hair down and muscled. Yeah. And he's like, well, you know, the joke's on Carla because she's the one who has to mop up this mess. Cue Carla walking up to him with the mop and mopping his face with the dirty mop.
Yeah. Good cold open, you know, pretty unrelated to anything else we see in the show, but it gives Carla and Cliff both something to do. And they're both, I'd say, on the light side on this episode. I mean, Cliff has a subplot, but it doesn't amount to much, honestly.
No, it's kind of a little goofy. There's a good capper to it, but yeah, it's there. When we come back from the opening credits, Woody has a pressure cooker that his mom sent him so that he could make a batch of her famous chili that he got from an old family recipe.
Well, it's a thermos at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He mentions that she sent the pressure cooker so he could make it, but he just comes in with a thermos of chili. That he mentions it's an old family recipe, and they're like, oh, is it your grandma's? He's like, no, just an old family that we know.
Yeah.
And he pours the thermos like a little bit into like a little bowl or tray for everybody. And then he serves that and sets the thermos down. And you see Fraser, Norm, and Pete, one of our tertiary guys, all trying some. And they're really liking it. And there's a beat where Carla asks what Norm thinks. And Norm burps. And she does the whole, he likes it. Normie likes it.
Yeah, like this, the old Life cereal commercial.
The Life cereal thing. Mikey likes it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which... I don't know when that commercial would have ran or aired, but I remember that. Like even at the time, I knew what that was referencing.
I think it ran sometime in the 70s because I remember that commercial from when I was a kid. And then I think they brought it back on some anniversary or another.
They must have, because I think I would have seen it in the 80s, but
yeah,
or at least
and
maybe
I remember it still running probably as late as the 90s. So
yeah,
but it's a really one of the all time famous commercials. I mean, entered the culture.
Yeah. They're like, we're sorry. What do we seem to have ate all your chili from like the bowl that he served them? And he's like, oh, don't worry about it. I got plenty more in the thermos. And everybody kind of backs away and we reveal what we didn't notice, was that Lilith is at the end of the bar sitting next to Frasier and just topping off the thermos, just pouring it into her mouth and tapping the back to get the last bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, running her finger along the inner rim to, like, lick it off. And she's just, and they're all, like, just looking at Lilith, who you don't expect to be. She's like, sorry, I skipped breakfast.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice seeing Lilith in this episode. It's like, it's before that time when they made B.B. New Earth an actual regular on the show, but she was popping up pretty frequently. And so it's kind of fun to see her in this episode. She's not, like, you know, part of the main plot line, really, but she's in there and she's doing stuff that maybe Frasier would be doing if B.B. New Earth wasn't available that week.
But it's also, like, in her, the few things that we get from her, it's not like her part or her little plot is revolving around Frasier at all.
No.
She could have been anybody in this scene, but it's like the fact that it's her eating the chili out of the thermos makes it, yeah, is what makes it funny. But even, like, later on, she has a scene with Sam that is, like, I don't even think Frasier's in that scene. So she's just kind of become part of the cast. She's just there. She has her own thing.
And, you know, that kind of brings up something I've wondered recently, you know, like, after Frasier leaves Cheers and, like, moves to Seattle and all that, I wonder, like, did Lilith keep coming to Cheers or did she just stop and hanging out with those people altogether? And I have no idea. I don't know what's more in character for Lilith, but, you know, she stayed in Boston, so there's, yeah, no, and, you know, if she's never going to run into Frasier, maybe she did keep coming into Cheers. I don't know.
Oh, that would be weird to think about.
I once asked B.B. New Earth that on Twitter, but I never got a response, unfortunately. I'd love to know her thoughts on that.
Oh, man. Then Cliff comes in. He has Norm to turn on the weather channel because Cliff is interested in the weather. Not really. It's because he's got a crush on Dorothy, the weather girl anchor. And he says, you know, he talks about how dreamy she looks. And there's a good little line. It's like, Cliff, I think everybody looks dreamy when they've got little clouds running behind them on the screen.
Yeah, that's a good line.
The woman Dorothy has a little bit of a lisp, which is an odd thing to have for a news anchor or broadcaster. Mm-hmm. But it's not, I mean, it's noticeable enough because they call attention to it. When she's talking about the type of clouds, Cliff says he always gets a kick out of the way she tries to pronounce stratocumulus.
Yeah, and the implication is that Cliff has been, like, watching her all night.
Yeah.
Because Frasier's like, you're a very lonely man, aren't you? Like, not as long as I got the weather channel.
Yeah. Which proves the point.
Yeah.
Then Sam walks back in. He mentioned that he was off with a girl named Natalie. And he was like, nothing like shushing down those fine white slopes. And they're like, you went skiing? He's like, no.
Yeah.
And Rebecca says, goody, Sam, you're back. And he's like, that's what Natalie said. No, she said, good, Sam, you're front. and of course, just because we need the three jokes about it, she's like, come on, I've got a surprise for you. Close your eyes and come with me. And he's like, this is deja vu for the whole weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice little entendre there. And Rebecca pulls him back to the pool room. Now, a good point, like just a few episodes ago, Rebecca and Sam acquired the pool room from John Allen Hill by buying it together. She put up $25,000 to Sam's $5,000. So she definitely has a majority stake in these. But
$25,000 wasn't even the entire price that they paid. Wow.
Yeah, it ended up being $30,000. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And that's $30,000 in 1991 dollars. My goodness.
Right. For the bathrooms and the pool room. Yeah.
Yeah. I remembered that, but I'd forgotten how much they bought them back for, and I forgot that Rebecca wasn't the one who did it all. So,
yeah.
Wow.
But so at this point, they do kind of have we don't know the details or if they had to sign something officially, but they have a joint ownership of at least the pool room. And she had no problem with changing it to fit whatever her desire. And she got rid of the pool table and the darts and everything and replaced it with furniture and tables and tablecloths and decorations that do not go with the Cheers aesthetic at all.
No. I mean, it doesn't even go with the aesthetic of, like, when Rebecca first took over the bar and there were ferns everywhere. And
it
was more of a yuppie bar instead of a sports bar. Here, now it's like this old-fashioned thing. It's kind of like when she was celebrating Cheers' 100th anniversary. Yeah, I guess Rebecca just really likes that aesthetic. She probably liked playing with dollhouses as a girl.
Right, but it's just like, and so Sam's reaction is not unsurprisingly, he hates it, and he doesn't just hate it. He hates it.
Yeah.
And he's like, how could you make a change without asking him? And she mentions the money that she paid for him. And if not Rebecca, he wouldn't even have a pool room. He goes, I don't have a pool room anymore. I have a tea room. And he's looking down. He's like, what is that? She's like, it's a throw rug. And he just picks it up and throws it down the hallway. Like, would this happen to be a throw table?
Yeah.
And she says that she wants her ideas respected, which is a valid point. But so he said he's going to step out into the hall because of the shock. Now that he's had a chance to absorb it, he'll take a look at it with fresh eyes and reassess. He walks out of the hall, walks back in. He's like, I hate it.
I like how he just goes, ish. And then he's like repulsed that he's used the word ish.
So
that was one of the better moments. If I can go on a quick digression, as I want to do, did you notice Sam's jacket in these scenes?
I usually do, but I don't remember.
Yeah, he's not wearing his usual Red Sox jacket. It's like a kind of unusual design, and I tried to read what it said on the back, and apparently on the back it says something like, on the 12th day of college, dual control, and it's in this sort of fancy calligraphy type face. And I don't know what the deal was with that jacket. I was like, is that something related to something? And I just did some searching, and apparently dual control was like a brand of jacket. So I guess it was some fashionable thing in the 1990s, but I was just like, I've never seen Sam in that jacket before.
The clothing in this season was just so weird. Like, Frasier had one of his kind of patented sweater vests, or like a cardigan, but it had like a Disney cartoon character sewn on the side, like not even centered, like on the side. And Woody had a shirt with something like that, some kind of like writing, but off center, like calligraphy or script writing kind of like to the side. And it was like, I don't know what was going on in this, like the wardrobe department this particular year, but they had some interesting choices.
Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. I didn't, maybe they had a new costume designer or something. Who knows? Yeah.
So Sam says, like, she has to change it. He hates this. He's not going to have a tea room back there. He's going to put the pool table back. He's going to put the room back the way it was as soon as he finds the pool table. Yeah. As he is saying this, he's walking towards his office, opens the door, and you just hear three ball, quarter pocket, like a pop of like the hit, and the ball comes flying out. And good hands on Sam. He catches it just before it hits him.
I kind of wish we could have seen the visual of the pool table in the office.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would have been fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun to imagine it, too. But I think later in the episode, like seeing the pool table in the office might have been fun.
I mean, they put like 2 dozen sheep in the office once. They could have gotten us to see the pool table. Anyway, instead of seeing the pool table in there, we just get Cliff kind of walking out there going, sorry, Sam, a little too much English on that. And he takes the ball.
Yeah.
Back. Then Sam, he puts a dollar value on the pool room. He says, people come in there just to play pool, and he probably makes an extra $100 a night just on that room, not counting the drinks or anything. And she says, well, her tea room will make $500 a night. And he's like, $500 a night? What else are you selling back there? And she says she'll split the profits with him. And of course, this leads to his first kind of jackassery where he's like, ooh, half the profits of zero. And he takes out a notepad and he starts drawing her profits, which is just a big zero. And then half of that, another big zero. And he's done this a few too many times this season.
Yeah.
So Rebecca is justified when she says, God, he's a butthead.
Yeah.
Then Cliff, still really fond of this weather girl, says that he sent her a fan letter and he wonders if she ever read it. Mm-hmm. He imagines they get so many fan letters. I don't think so, Cliff.
I mean, the Weather Channel was still kind of a new thing back then. Mm. I don't remember the Weather Channel really being a thing before the early 90s.
Yeah, I guess not. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know when exactly it started. Maybe I can Google that real fast.
And then Frasier and Lilith come in together, not for drinks, but to try the tea room. And Sam asks if they're going to go back there and make fun of Rebecca. They're like, no, they're just going to order some tea. He's like, well, what? Then you're going to spill it on the floor and laugh? They're like, no, we're going to drink it. And he's like, what's so funny about that? He's like, it's not going to be funny. We just came here for tea. And they're like, well, you'd be the first customer she's gotten all day. And they're kind of surprised by that because she sent them handwritten invites on doilies. And Lilith's like, didn't anybody else get these? And everybody in the bar throws them as paper airplanes at Frasier and Lilith.
Yeah. Pretty impressive you can make a paper airplane out of a doily.
Yeah.
By the way, I stand corrected. I just looked it up. The Weather Channel launched on May 2nd, 1982. So, wow. It was around for roughly as long as Cheers was.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Predates Cheers by four or five months. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's moment here. I don't know why. Like this season and the next one for summer, I have a lot of stronger memories of watching these as a kid with my family. And for some reason, I remember this boat bit here. My dad was particularly fond of, because Frasier and Lilith are going to walk by and Norm kind of starts teasing Frasier, like, come on, you're not going to go back there and drink tea, are you? Come on back here, sit with the guys. He does this kind of like high, kind of coaxing, kind of whiny voice, like, this is where you want to be, Frasier. Kind of slightly like, I mean, the implication that, you know, that'd be too effeminate or feminine to go back there and have tea when you want to sit with the guys. But the way Norm is doing it, like the way he's coaxing him and saying it in that voice is teasing in its own self. And that Norm knows how this is going to end. Yeah. And he knows that Frasier is going to go back there with Lilith. And that's just part of the teasing. But I like the voice there. He's like, come on, let's just sit here with the guys.
And I like how Frasier just says, I'm whipped and proud of it.
Yeah. But before that, you see it kind of working on Frasier. He's kind of like smiling. He's like, oh, shucks. He's like, they want me to come spend time with them. And he's like,
well, Frasier always wants to be one of the guys so badly. Yes. I mean, that's one of his big character traits. Exactly. So he's always so happy to be included with the guys. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he looks at Lilith and he's just like, nope, not going to do that. I'm like, come on. He's like, well, maybe if I just sat down for a second. She just clears her throat. He's like, nope, I'm whipped and proud of it. Yeah. Then back in the tea room, they're sitting down. Rebecca shows them the menu, all the little like sandwiches and other entrees that they have to offer. And they're like, just some tea. And then Rebecca tries to upsell them with, you know, scones or biscuits. And they just want two pots of orange pico. And then they're like, oh, maybe we should split a pot because they're watching their weight.
Yeah.
And Rebecca just kind of freaks out. She's like, you can't just order tea. Tea is a loss leader. I lose money just by boiling the water.
Right. And she says to Lilith, like, Lilith, you don't need to watch your weight. You're practically anorexic. And she's like, you know, at least have some strawberries. And she's like, strawberries make me break out in a rash. And she says, well, at least you'd get some color in your face. And it just made me realize, man, Bebe North really had to put up with a lot of jokes about her appearance.
Yeah.
On the show. I mean, she was a good sport because like half the jokes were about her being so pale or looking like death or whatever. And, you know, obviously those were jokes about her character, not her, but I wonder if like she ever read a script and was like, hey,
I mean, all things considered, I would rather have a joke in here like bit that you're too pale and you're too skinny than be an actor where it's like, we're going to make a lot of jokes about how fat you are. Are you okay with that? It's like, all right, you're paying me. I guess this is what I got.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't know. That just always seems to be like treading a weird line when you're making jokes about a character's appearance, but you're also kind of making fun of the actor's appearance as well.
But, right. I mean, they cast for a certain reason, but
yeah. But of course, you know, Lilith's image is not Bebe Neuwirth's image. I mean, Bebe Neuwirth is like, you know, this Broadway dancer, so she's like a lot more glamorous and sexy than Lilith is, I would say.
Right. I also think being overly self-conscious or even a little self-conscious about your appearance is detrimental to being a performer or an actor of some kind.
If you probably really want to,
I think you kind of need to be able to shuck all that aside in order to do the job. But
yeah, your ego has to go out the window, I think. Yeah.
I'm just going to throw it out there. Probably easier for men to do than women just because of, you know, society.
Yeah, but, probably.
But like this whole moment, like, is this scene just like, in a nutshell, why Rebecca wasn't good in business, like why she's been a failure at this. Like, she's like, this whole thing is setting around tea, but she can't survive on tea. She can't make money selling tea. And like, when they say like, no, that's all they want, she insults her first customer. She's like so desperate. It's like, oh my God, Rebecca.
I feel like there's a wide variety of reasons why Rebecca's not good at business.
Sure. Yeah. Probably.
But yeah, this is kind of it in microcosm. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, she has bad ideas. She insults her customers. She doubles down when something's not working. I mean, there's a variety of reasons.
Because they walk off after she insults Lilith twice. They kind of like storm out and they're walking back, and she chases them down the hallway apologetically. Mm-hmm. And she's just like so desperate. And then Frasier stops and has this moment where he's like, a restaurant should be like a mistress. One shouldn't feel she's over eager to please. It's more exciting if you need her more than she needs you.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, you know, I like the idea because every once in a while, Frasier will kind of go off on this little thing where you can tell he has these sexual fantasies and he gets caught up in them and then mm-hmm. realizes oftentimes that he's sitting right next to Lilith. But this one, he doesn't get taken down. He walks away kind of triumphantly with that. And she's the one following him. Like, who's this? Who are you talking about? Who's this she? And he's like, oh, it's a purely hypothetical. She's like, well, it's a little strange for a happily married man to prattle on about a mistress. And he's like, give me this one. You already heard me say I was whipped in front of the boys.
She's like, that was good.
That was good. She's like, all right. Yeah. And I like that whole little exchange between them. But it's also, it feels forced in a weird way. Like, why was that the analogy that Frasier came to think about, like, how she can do better in business or something like that, mm-hmm. like how she can attract more customers? It felt like a weird non sequitur almost. Just, I don't know. It felt like a forced setup for a kind of comedic bit or string of lines that I do like.
Mm-hmm.
But the premise is kind of like, eh, all right.
I feel like after they married off Frasier and Lilith, they always kind of ping-ponged between jokes about him being a henpecked husband or jokes about him not being happy in the marriage, or they just kind of went with whatever was funniest for the scene. And they didn't, I don't think they were ever really that consistent about it. I guess you can kind of look back on it now and be like, oh, well, that's why that marriage didn't work out. Spoiler alert. Yeah, but it is kind of inconsistent, I would say.
And once they're gone, then you see Rebecca is obviously pretty ready to admit defeat. Sam is not very sympathetic. But at that point, Woody comes back with another batch of chili. And everybody is just sort of ravenously devouring this stuff. And she's mm-hmm. kind of like, this is really popular. She's like, if I sold the chili back in my tea room, do you think I could make $500? And they're like, easily. So she quickly hijacks it and just takes the batch from Woody. She's like, chili in the tea room. And they all like chase her back there. And you see the fear suddenly on Sam's face.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he's like, oh, this could actually work in her favor.
Right.
Yeah. And then we get like a payoff to the Cliff subplot, where he finally gets an answer back from the letter that he wrote to the weather lady.
Which, again, it's the sitcom logic, so you have to throw like common sense out of the way. But the fact that Cliff, a postal carrier, gets mm-hmm. his own private mail delivered to the bar.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Carla's like, Cliff, you got a letter. It's like, like, why?
I guess he sent it off from Cheers or something. I don't know. Because, you know, well, yeah, why would you do that when you go to the post office every day?
There's a line. I think it's next season. There's actually a moment when Henri gets a letter to the bar.
Uh-huh.
And Rebecca's like, why do you have your mail delivered here? And he's like, well, since I came here to America, I feel like you are part of my family and this is my home. Plus, sometimes I get mail post. Sometimes I get letters postage due.
I think it's just one of those conventions of the show. They just do it for convenience sake. It's like, you know, when people like just come to Boston, they don't go to a hotel room, or they come right to the bar.
Exactly.
They have their suitcases in hand.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Carla's like, here, Cliff, you got a letter. And then she goes, by the way, did I ever take you out back and kick you in the head for that postal increase?
Yeah.
And he's like, uh-huh. And she's like, good. I'm just going over my checklist. That's the response from his weather girl, Dorothy. And he's like, oh, look, she sent a picture of herself. I was like, no, I think that's a satellite photo of the entire Eastern Seaboard. Yeah, but she's in there. I mean, I'm in there. We're all in there. For the capper, Norma reads the letter that she wrote to Cliff and gets to the point where he's like, you didn't tell me what grade you're in, but from the handwriting, I'm guessing you're a big boy of 11 or 12.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Which, you know, I was like, okay, that's not much of a payoff, but hey, it took up some time in the episode, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, we could have gotten a bigger reaction from Cliff to having that embarrassment, but
yeah. I mean, I'm kind of surprised they didn't, you know, since it was a picture of the Eastern Seaboard and like she's in there and I'm in there, I'm surprised Cliff didn't try to pay it off as, hey, it's a picture of us together,
yeah,
or something like that. But
right.
I don't know. I wanted like a bigger payoff for that subplot somehow, because I don't think it amounted to too much.
Mm-hmm.
But
as the night proceeds, Rebecca is selling a lot of chili. Sam is acting like he's not too worried about her making the $500. And we get a guy named Albert in the credits, played by Stanley Bennett Clay. This is actually his second appearance on the show. He showed up earlier in the season, in the third episode of the season, where he played a cement delivery man when Sam ordered pretzels and they got cement instead because of the confusion. So,
uh-huh.
I guess he could technically be playing the same character, but it really doesn't matter if it isn't. But yeah, he kind of like leans against the wall and he's like, he can't take another bite. And Sam's like, wow, look at that. See, she can't sell anymore. But luckily, Rebecca's selling gallon buckets for takeout.
Yeah.
And Sam is now like, I got to find a way to stop her or I'm going to lose my pool room. And Carl's like, I agree. Go for the jugular. And he's like, well, you have an idea of a way I could sabotage her? And Carl's like, no, go for her jugular.
Yeah. Nobody would want to buy chili with her throat ripped out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they could, but who'd want to eat it?
Yeah. So Sam is going to call the fire marshal, but he thinks better of it. He doesn't want to do that. That wouldn't be fair. And Rebecca comes out to, you know, show her appreciation, but really it's just to mock him in return for him mocking her all day. And when she walks back to the pool room, he calls the fire marshal. And when the fire marshal shows up, and this is another returning guy, Fire Marshal Dobbins, played by Robert McCray. This is his second of four appearances on Cheers. He was previously in one of the Bar Wars episodes when he came in and they thought that Gary's Old Town Tavern sent in a fake fire marshal to get them in trouble.
Right. And they pants him or they spray water down his pants or something like that.
Yeah.
And I remember his delivery of, what are you doing? And it was just this very flat delivery. And I was like, hey, it's that guy again.
Yeah. And he's got two more appearances, both of them in season 11. And just, I noticed just on his IMDb, he also did some voiceover work in Star Wars video games, like the Rogue Squadron and TIE Fighter video games. I thought that was cool.
That's cool. Did he play Porkins?
Oh, could have, maybe, might have. Shout out to Eckhart from William Batman. What was he in? Was he in Superman or Superman 2?
He's in Superman 4 as one of the arms dealers that Lex Luthor sells nuclear weapons to. He's in the 89 Batman as Lieutenant Eckhart.
Cop. And he was in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And he's in Raiders of the Lost Ark, one of the government guys who talks to Indiana Jones at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because he was, I think he was like a character actor living in England.
So. Yeah.
And I think that's all shot in England, so.
Right. Anyway, Fire Marshal Dobbins shows up and Sam's acting all innocent. He's like, there's no reason for the fire marshal to be here except for the exposed propane tanks and the unventilated hot plate. Oh, now those are fire hazards, aren't they?
Oh, and you're a fire marshal. Oh, what did I do?
So he goes back there to check it out. And, you know, Sam is kind of having misgivings. Maybe I shouldn't have put a mouse in the chili. Or he's like, maybe I shouldn't have called the fire marshal. I should have put a mouse in the chili and called the health department instead. He said that would have been funnier.
Yeah.
And this is the point where Lilith is just there. She came back for whatever reason on her own. And she kind of shames him for sabotaging Rebecca's efforts. Like, everything this woman has ever done has led to failure. And she's like, you're just sabotaging her again, taking her legs out. It's like, doesn't that make you feel bad? He's like, well, it's my pool room, you know? And she's like, but it's her entire life. He's like, but that's my pool room. And, you know, the guys, they kind of team up, they gang up on him, they kind of shame him. You know, you didn't have to do it. You didn't play fair. And what he's like, we understand. You made a fair bet. And when you saw you were going to lose, you cheated. And
yeah.
And Sam.
And even Carla is like coming down on him. Yeah. And he's like, no, but you were the one who told me to cheat. And she said, no, I said, kill her. Cheating is wrong.
Yes, I love that. It's one of my favorite parts. I told you to kill her. Cheating is wrong.
Yeah. Carl has a very interesting scale of morality.
Yeah, yeah. And Sam's defense, he's like, I didn't want to be a sore loser. He's like, I didn't want to be a poor sport. I just wanted to do whatever it took to win.
Yeah.
And then the fire marshal comes back and he's like, this is some list, Ms. Howe. And Norm's like, oh, great. Now he's writing her a citation. But he's not doing that. He's taking down the recipe.
Yeah.
And
remember, like, it's ground chuck, not ground beef.
Ground chuck. Yeah. He's like, that serves eight? And she's like, yeah, you're going to serve it to all the guys that put at the fire station? It's like, why should I? What have they ever done for me? And she's like, Sam, why would the fire marshal come to my tea room on this of all nights? He's like, kismet? But Sam is genuinely apologetic. He doesn't want to be a bad sport. He's like, how much money do you need to make 500? She's like, I need about 20 bucks. He's like, here, I'll buy $20 worth of chili. He's like, I'll just to show you that I didn't mean to be a bad guy and to cheat you out of this. I'll help you win. So, and she's like, oh, good, good. She's like, you put on Woody's hat and I'm going to get a camera so I can take a picture of you serving the bowl of chili. And he walks back there and Woody's like, hey, I turned off the cooker. You have to turn it back on. Do you know how to set the flame? And Sam's like, I can figure it out. And then you hear an explosion from the back. And Woody's like, that's how I figured it out too.
Yeah.
They run back to the pool room / tea room. There is now a gaping hole in the wall by the stained glass window. Tables are thrown over. There's chili sprayed all over the walls and the floor, and also all over Sam. And he just turns around like in like stunned shock. He's like, it was an accident.
Yeah, yeah.
Norm is like, look at the hole in the wall. It's like, yeah, you can't even miss it. He's like, no, the hole across the street. It's like across the alley. He's like, that pressure cooker really wanted out of here.
And I wonder how much space they had behind the pool room set on the soundstage at Cheers. Because, like, you don't necessarily get the depth that you should. It doesn't feel like there's an alley behind there or anything. It feels like there's a wall maybe, like, 2 or 3 feet behind.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to kind of look closely to be like, oh, yeah, they did put a hole in the wall. And that's supposed to be, like, the building across the alley or whatever. But.
Yeah, I mean, the scene when Norm was like half stuck in it, half in and half out.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah. And also, I guess that's where Sam parks his Corvette.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
Yeah. And Rebecca tells everybody to get out, or Sam has a good line there. He's like, he says to Carly, he's like, have you ever had a pot of chili fly by your face at the speed of light? He's like, no. He's like, don't.
Yeah.
Rebecca clears everybody out, and she's like, I need to talk to you. And he goes, don't you think I should go to a trauma center first? And he's showing the stains on her shirt. He's like, some of this could be me.
Yeah.
And she thinks that he blew up her tea room because he was jealous of her success. And he says, no, it was an accident. He's really sorry. He didn't mean for this to happen. He's so sorry, in fact, that he could cry. And she's like, okay, do it. He's like, what do you mean? She's like, cry. I want to see you cry. And he's like puts on like these fake. He's like, doesn't it mean that I'm trying to cry? She's like, no. He's like, isn't there anything sadder than a man who can't cry?
Who wants to cry, but he can't. Yeah, he's trying to force himself to cry, but he can't quite.
Right. So she's like, all right, let me help you. I'll see if I can help you cry. And she grabs like a, what is it, like the ladle or something? She takes like a, from like the thing, and she kind of like steps out into the alley through like the broken window. And you just hear like a few kind of like splintered glass and shattered glass and everything a couple times. And she walks back in and he's like, what was that sound? She's like, that was me breaking the windows of your Corvette. And it cuts to black and you just hear her voice going, there are those tears.
Yeah. Because Sam loves his vet.
Yeah. It's a fun episode. There are a few parts where kind of like, all right, is this in character? Like it's not a high stakes one. You're right. It might not be the most memorable. I mean, I think the redressed set of making this a tea room and then blowing it up kind of gives you that visual anchor that I think makes this a more memorable episode. Cause whenever I hear the name, I was like, oh, I remember exactly what happens in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, there's still a lot of fun in this one. So.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. And surprisingly, Norm had 6 beers this episode, which brings him up to 918 this season.
He's averaging about 100 beers a season, I guess.
He's gotten to that point, yeah. There was for the first couple of seasons, he was under 100 a season, but he jumped past that, and now it's about that, yeah.
No, well, so his problem is getting worse over time. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. Who is your employee of the week or the MVP?
I think my employee of the week, it has to be Sam. I feel like this is a Sam episode, if it's anybody. I mean, just hearing his various reactions to the tea room, the you know, oh, ish. And then he's like repulsed with himself for using the word ish, and his reaction after the chili blows up in his face. Yeah, I think Sam was the one who made me laugh the most in this episode.
Yeah, I was going between Sam and Rebecca. I was even thinking like Carla at a few points, but I was, but yeah, ultimately it came down to Sam. I enjoyed his performance a little bit more. Despite the fact that he was obnoxious in kind of that middle chunk, which was annoying, but just like his final part was like, there's nothing sadder than a man who wants to cry and can't.
Yeah, yeah.
What was your home run or your best gag?
I had a tough one coming up with a home run for this episode. I watched it again and I was like, okay, well, what's the line that makes me laugh the most? And there wasn't any one line that really stood out. So I think I went with what I figured was the best gag, which was, something you quoted a little earlier where Sam's back from his trip to the mountains with Natalie. And he says, nothing like shushing down those fine white slopes. And they're like, oh, you went skiing? And he's like, no. I think that's a clever gag. So I gave it to that.
Yeah.
But if you have a really good choice for a home run, I might be persuaded to just change my vote to yours.
I think my runner up would be that moment that I mentioned that where the guy's like, where Norm was like, come on, raise your seven with us, come on. Uh-huh. Just the delivery of that is kind of so childish that it tickles me. But in terms of actual lines and bits, I think when Carla's like, you didn't have to cheat. And he's like, you told me to cheat. She's like, no, I told you to kill her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cheating is wrong.
Yeah. That's a good one too. And that might be my runner up, but yeah.
Oh, well, John, thank you again for coming back on Cheers Cast. Where else can people find you if they want to hear more from you?
Well, as you said at the top of the show, you can listen to my podcast, the SNL Nerds, which I do with my buddy, Darren Patterson. We talk about episodes of Saturday Night Live, when there are new ones, and then when there are not new ones, we cover a movie starring an SNL alum, which gives us no shortage of material. So,
fun show. Yeah,
yeah. So check us out. We've had Ryan on when after George went unfortunately passed away. We went back and looked at an old episode that he hosted, and Ryan was kind enough to join us for that.
So. Yeah, and I was in the two Andy Samberg movie one. That we did
before. Oh, yes. We did that where we did the
7 days in hell. The
7 days in hell.
Sports mockumentary episode.
Yeah, the tour, the something or other.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun stuff. Check those out, people, if you haven't already. Thanks again for coming back. And thanks to all of you who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving a comment on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Let's go, Fraser.
Wait, Fraser. You're not really going to go in there and drink tea, are you? Come on out here, sit with the bar, you know, with the guys.
Well, I guess I could. No.
I mean, you're telling us you're just going to go back there and sit with your wife and sip tea?
Yep, that's me. Whipped and proud of it.